Hello, hello, and welcome. Welcome once again to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast, the only podcast that grows with you through all seven stages of your journey as a founder. And I came across this crazy statistic that I think all business owners should know, and that is 4 out of 5 businesses fail to sell. That's 80%. That's insane. And so, especially for those of you stage 5 CEO founders out there who have an eye on becoming owners or selling your business outright, this is a must-watch episode because here with us today is a podcast friend of mine, the one and only Daryl Bates Brownsword, who helps business owners to turn their life's work into a valuable legacy. As an expert in succession and exit planning, he works with small and medium enterprises to build resilient, sellable businesses that thrive without owner dependence. Through his 21-step methodology and Exit Insights podcast, Daryl empowers entrepreneurs to maximize business value, minimize risks, and exit on their terms. Daryl's insights are a must hear if you're ready to secure your future and create a business that buyers will love. And he's here with us today. So, Daryl, at Succession Plus, you guys guide founders through, especially as is stated on your website, these 5 big, we'll call them value stages, to make their business sale ready. So for a founder, had some success, they've got an executive team around them, the business is really humming. For all intents and purposes, they have no reason to think about selling right now, but someday they will, and oftentimes it's too late. So for those who are in that place, they don't necessarily need to get out. You and I know that's the best time to start working on your exit strategy. So for that person, what are these 5 different stages and why are they so essential for a high value sale?
Thanks, Scott, for the fantastic introduction. And I love the fact that we're getting straight into the meaty stuff. So it's 100% value straight off the bat. So 5 stages. These are just the stages that we need to think about if we're going to be selling our business. We want business owners to be moving beyond the, hey, I think my business is worth X. I've seen my mate sell his business and I talked him down the path and he got this and I got that and mine's better than his. There's a bit of a black art and a black box to valuing a business, but let's put you on the front foot. Let's make sure that you are in the best possible position because of that stat that you shared before, like 4 out of 5 businesses don't get to sell. And it's the smaller end of the market where that overweights that stat. But still, why do they not sell? Is we need to start thinking about when someone's looking to buy your business, how are they going to value it? What are they looking for? And the big picture of what they're doing is they're going, what's the likelihood of this business continuing on its current path or its current trajectory once the ownership changes? And yeah, the more you can mitigate that risk, the more value you're going to do. So let's quickly look at the 5 stages. The first one is let's start our exit planning. So let's just identify what we've got already. Let's do a snapshot. Let's do some due diligence from your side of the table while you're in control, while you own the business. Let's then sort of protect what you've already built. You've been building your business and doing a whole lot yourself and running the business and growing and getting annual growth. But let's just sort of protect and mitigate all the risks that are just out there that you're flying by the seat of your pants. You know, and I'm not saying you're unstructured or anything, but there's just a whole lot of risks that sit in your business that you're just consuming every day. So let's protect what you've got. And part of that protection will make sure that your business is worth at least the standard industry average. Once you've got that under your belt, you can then start to go breathe a sigh of relief because you've actually built a nice foundation for your business. You can then start thinking about how do I maximize the valuation of my business? I've got a nice foundation in place. I've secured, if you like, the standard industry multiple. Now, what are all those intangible things I can start to work on that will increase the multiplier of my profit number and increase the valuation that way? So all the intangible assets. Now, once I've been looking at that, and I can take my business as far as I want to go, so there's a simple formula and list, if you like, of the things you can work on, or the intangible assets. Now I've maximized my value, I'll get to the stage 4, and that's how do I extract it? Because then, I want to make sure that I'm set up for a deal that I don't have to get my valuation through an earnout. How do I secure that exit transaction piece and get all of those component parts line up so I get to exit on my terms. And then once I've done that, if all goes to plan, I've set myself up, I've set my family up, I've set the business up, so the business will continue to run and prosper without me or any other owners involved. But now I've extracted all of my family wealth that's been sitting in that risky entity, the business, for so many years. I've extracted it out, and I've got hopefully now a nice, really healthy bank account, and I've got a different type of wealth to manage. I've got a different risk profile. But how do I manage the value that I've just extracted out of my business? And if I've done really well, how do I make sure that it's generational wealth? How do I avoid, you know, the different types of legal and tax traps that I haven't been aware of over all these years? So it's I now need to manage all of that wealth and create the family value I've created.
Love it. I love it. So let's walk through these briefly, because I think there's some there's some big opportunities to get these stages wrong. So it's one thing to know what they are. It's another to do them right. So identify value stage right out of the gate. What's the biggest mistake that most folks make here?
Thinking their business is worth a certain number because of industry averages, because of their mate sold his or her business down the pub, you know, without getting an independent valuation. My encouragement is, if you start the exit planning, get a current state assessment. Understand what your business is worth today, and get that done by someone who doesn't have skin in the game. And what I mean is, if you get an investment banker in your business or a business broker to value the business, they're inclined, they're motivated to give you a number to win your business that's going to seduce you into working with them. So when we're just doing the planning stage, let's start with an independent valuation, and then let's here's the big tip, Scott. Let's develop, when we start exit planning or succession planning, it doesn't mean I'm going to exit in 2 or 3 years. It means I'm just getting the business so it is exitable.
Yes.
And to do that, I need to make the mindset shift from revenue growth year on year to valuation growth. Let me start measuring the valuation of my business every year, because that's where the rubber hits the road, right? Like, profit's vanity, valuation sanity. Let's get some serious, you know, methodologies into our business and assess the valuation, not just the profit.
So good. So good. All right. So moving forward, stage two, we've gotten an independent valuation. Now it's time to protect that value. What are some of the risks that you see disappear under the radar? We'll put it that way. What are the biggest risks that are right in front of them, but that a lot of founders miss?
Biggest one is perhaps owner dependence, I guess, is, you know, who does what? If someone's sick, how do I transfer roles and responsibilities slickly? And that's, you know, is the business systemized? So I guess I'm separating operational risk and methodology risk, I guess, if you like. But there's a whole lot of risks that we can address by working with an insurance broker, and we can, you know, protect our income, we can protect all of our business assets, we can do all the standard things with getting insurance policies. But if we do a proper risk assessment, we want to start looking at governance. We want to start looking at systems. We want to look at owner dependence. And they're the things that I really focus on, because we'll just outsource and get a risk assessor in to do a full-blown risk assessment.
Right.
But what are the things that we can do? We touched earlier, we want to demonstrate that the business will continue on its growth trajectory once the ownership changes. And the best way to do that is to demonstrate that as the owner of the business, you're not required in the business, but you're operating in just three roles. And here's my biggest tip here, if you like. You want to make sure that you're seen as the person, as the vision, and you're sharing the vision, and you're the big ideas person going, we've got to go in this direction. The management team figures out how to get us in that direction and keeps pushing us in that direction. Management team, leadership team, whatever you want to call it. Because it's an SME business, an owner, you know, in business, owner-led business, where the owners are involved, not necessarily in day jobs, but they're involved in the business, they're the keepers of the culture. No matter what we say about vision and values and what have you, people are just going to look to us for guidance on how we show up and behave in the business. We behave in a certain way, that's the standard they follow. So we set the vision, we keep the culture. And the third thing is, we're not in operational roles, we coach, we don't play. So if we just focus on those three things, then that's the biggest risk mitigation gone. You're adding real value to the business. You're coming up with the big ideas, coming up with the big strategies. You're setting the culture, and you're not involved on a daily basis because you've got people, competent people who know exactly the scope of their roles and the extent of their responsibilities running the business. And they're running the business to a systemized approach. So So they've systemized the running of the business, and they're using something like EOS.
Fantastic.
Hi there, this is Scott. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to get back to the show in just a few seconds, but first I wanted to let you know about my brand new Founders Evolution Quiz. If you're a founder, business owner, or CEO who feels overworked by the business you lead and underwhelmed by the results you're getting, you're doing it wrong. Succeeding as a founder all comes down to doing the right one or two things for right now. So take the quiz today at founderquiz.com. Again, that's founderquiz.com. And in just 10 questions, you can figure out what stage you're in so you can focus on what's going to work and say goodbye to everything else. Now, back to the show. Fantastic. So that gives us a real natural segue into maximizing the value. So we've got the base level, hey, we're not below market in these areas. Now, how do we really start to step on the accelerator? You talked about changing our focus from revenue growth or profit growth to valuation growth.
Yeah.
What are the main pitfalls here? How do we tend to get this wrong, and what can we do better?
The things we get wrong, again, is making assumptions and just looking at everyone else. And what I see is business owners, they're going, hey, look, this person sold his business and they got 5 times. Mine's better than his, you know, and mine's worth 7. We go, why? Substantiate that claim. Or they'll go, hey, but that business got 12 times. And we'll go, why? And they'll go, well, they just got lucky. I go, bullshit, nonsense, right? So there's a reason that they got 12 times, and it's because they had built the intangible assets. And what are the things we mean by intangible assets? Well, they demonstrated that the culture, you know, was clean, and you know, people stayed around, and they knew exactly what they were doing, and you know, they didn't have staff turnover. And, you know, people knew exactly what they're doing. They knew they had job descriptions. We had an organizational structure. We had systems in place to make sure that the business was consistent, repeatable, reliable. Everyone knew what they're doing. And it means that they're not working stupid hours to get things done and peaks and troughs. Great culture. We've then got, we talked about systems. We've got a systemized approach. We've then got some sort of proprietary methodology around our product. And we can be a service-based business. But whatever it is that you're selling, your service, is a proposition, and it's got to solve a problem that the client has. Now, they can come to you and say, hey, I want a haircut from you, if we're a beauty salon or what have you. Or they can go, I want the Scott special thing, because everyone knows that the Scott special, and I'll probably use a bad name there, but the your...
No, it's definitely it.
It's a company name. So what we want to demonstrate that... To really build value, that the people are coming to buy the proposition rather than the purpose, the person. Mm. And that's why I said Scott was probably a bad
example. Okay.
We want people to buy whatever your business sells, which is packaged up and you've built some IP around it, and they're either buying your methodology or your name or your solution name or what have you. Mm. We want people coming to your business for the process or methodology rather than Scott who's doing it or Daryl who's doing it, we love Scott because Scott always looks after us. He does a great job. And I'll just follow Scott, whichever business he goes to next.
Right.
That deflates value from your business. So we've got some idea methodology. And the next thing we've got is we've got some branding. Have we branded the business? Is my methodology now linked to my brand, and the two are one and the same? And whenever I talk about brand X, I'm associating it with that methodology or that IP or product or what have you. And then bang, that branding becomes known in the marketplace. A lot of business owners, especially when they're small, they'll get a logo and a brand and some letterhead done, and they think they've done branding. Branding's so much more than that when you talk to the gurus. And it's being, the brand is a promise. It becomes, you know, it's like, you know, if we talk about Trump as a brand, everyone knows what you're going to get with a guy. You know, doesn't matter which side of the fence you sit on, you know what you're going to get with Trump. You know, you may like it, you may not. It doesn't matter. He's branded and it's worked well, and everyone knows what to expect from him. That's what I mean by branding. So your business needs to have an implied promise just that's associated with your name. That's when you've nailed it, and then your business is worth a whole lot more. Next thing is, you know, on the little methodology that I use is, are you scalable? If I've built this little prototype, if you like, where I've got my product, my methodology, my culture, and my staff, and my structures and my systems in place, and I've got my routes to market tapped because I know exactly who I'm solving problems for, and I know how to approach my target market, then I've got a template, if you like. I love Gerber's language in the E-Myth. I think he called it a franchise prototype, but you can then plug and play and replicate that business model in more locations. You're scalable.
Right.
So that's the next layer. If I can just demonstrate that here's my prototype, I just need a bucket of money, PE type money, to come in, and then I can, then the business will scale up. But I've done all the hard work, I've proved the concept for you. Bang, there's the next piece. You put all those things in place, you're going to get a top multiple for valuation for your business.
Absolutely. So that takes us to the next stage here, and unlocking that value. So this can be really intimidating for a lot of folks because it has a huge impact on your life. In many ways, it's the final assessment of how you've done over this years, in all these years, in a few ways. And there's a lot of emotion riding in all of this. So as we're walking into this unlock value stage, how can we manage some of the emotion, and what should we expect?
I think you've nailed it there, Scott. There's a lot of emotion involved. I've built this business over so many years. Yeah, it's hard not to be attached to it, and it's hard to separate. It's a bit like when your kids go and get married, I guess, or they leave home, which they're going to do. Yeah, as much as you love having them at home, you love when they leave home to give you a break, but at the same time, you don't want them to go because they're now adults and they're good company and they're with you. So your business is going to leave home at some point. So the best thing we can do is get a third party involved who's not emotionally attached to our business to drive the process and to drive the negotiations. So whether that's an investment banker and a CFO and a lawyer, they're the three that I would always have as part of the team. And I'd in fact get the CFO involved 2 or 3 years before to start getting the financials and the business due diligence ready. And even if you've already got a part-time CFO in your business or even a full-time CFO, I would consider getting a deal specialist CFO in to support your regular CFOs because they've still got their day job that they need to do. But you get a deal specialist CFO in to get the business specifically ready for exit because you don't want anything to slow down the negotiations once you start talking deals. Anything that will slow it down will decrease the value of your business. So you've got your CFO involved. You get your investment banker. They know the – and you want one that's got specific knowledge of your industry. Get them involved. They can do all the negotiations on your behalf, and they're not emotionally attached. They know the market. They know what's possible. They've got the experience to do all the negotiations on your behalf. And the third one, an attorney or a lawyer or a solicitor, depending on where you're based, make sure you've got – again – get someone who's got experience in deals to make sure that you're not taking any unnecessary risks and you're not going to be caught out by the terms of the deal that end up being more favorable to the buyer than the seller. So they're the three key players that you want. And that's where a lot of people take shortcuts because they're expensive, but it's like L'Oreal. It's worth it.
Yeah.
And there we go. There's an example of branding. L'Oreal.
Love it. I love it. Now, what happens here, and you mentioned this in the very start of the episode, you got a big wad of cash inside a bank account somewhere. For most business owners, way more than they've ever had before.
Yeah.
And with that bank balance comes a huge responsibility to steward it well. And so as we're looking at that balance, thinking about turning it into generational wealth, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see post-exit, post-sale, that founders and owners make?
Biggest one I see is when a business owner's been building their business and building their wealth steadily over 15, 20 years, and they may have an IFA or a wealth manager or a financial planner that they're working with, and they've been working with all those years. And because they've got a good relationship with them, they want to be loyal to that person. I understand that. We all do. But just like when you're running your business, your suppliers and your clients, and especially if you're B2B, your client businesses, tend to be a similar size and scale to you often for your most successful relationships. So if you're a 10 million pound business, you're probably working with an accountant who is a 10 million pound or a $10 million business, because they're a similar scale to you and scope of operations, and they know how to look after businesses of your size.
True.
So you can see where I'm going with this. If you now got a whole lot of money because you've been really prosperous in building the valuation of your business, and you got a big chunk of change, and we're now talking that you may end up with 10, 20, 30, hundreds of millions of the proceeds that end up in your bank account. You need to make sure that you're working with a professional who's used to dealing with funds and investments of that size.
Yes. Okay?
After all those years of hard work, you don't want to blow it by making the wrong investments, by missing out on, by paying too much tax, by not protecting your generational wealth, looking after your family members and doing the right things and getting your wills and all of the other bits and pieces and trusts. And you've just got to get someone who's an expert, and I'm not an expert in this area, but you want to work with someone who's got a private office, who's used to dealing, they're not buying retail investments and just, getting things off the shelf. These guys are, access to wholesale. They're just working with private client and that amount of wealth. So get the right advisors, again, is the key here.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marshall Goldsmith, nailed it with what got you here won't get you there. But what keeps striking me as we're going through this episode is who got you here won't get you there, right? Most founders at this stage have a brilliant team around them. They're executing. I mean, it's like clockwork. And a lot of what goes wrong here is the team that runs your business is not the team you need to transition your business.
Totally.
And that can be intimidating. But if you think about it, you didn't know how to figure out who you needed back in the early days, right? You figured that over time. With the right guidance and the right focus, you can build that skill for this stage of your journey as well. Every one of those questions came back to a who, right? It came back to who we need in this process. It was so, so helpful. If you didn't catch that, you're listening or watching, go back and watch it again, because you'll see that the thread run all the way through, and just make a list of all the people you need to connect with. And that's your homework. But Daryl, before I let you go, because we've got through these five different stages, but there's a question that I ask all my guests that I'd love to ask you. And then we'll make sure folks know how they can get in touch with you, because I know they have questions. But my question is this: what is the biggest secret that you wish wasn't a secret at all? What's that one thing you wish every founder owner listening today knew?
The big one, Scott, is, and when you, I didn't know this question was coming, and I was sitting here going, oh, what's he going to hit me with? Well, I know the answer. But I know the answer to this straight away. The biggest secret is kind of where we started this, is we said, hey, look, only four out of five businesses that go to market don't sell. They don't end up with a successful deal. And that kind of is the biggest secret, because business owners, the successful business owners that we're talking about, are very entrepreneurial. Entrepreneurial people are really optimistic people. And all of them think, well, I'm going to be that 20%, right? So the biggest secret is they just assume that our business is okay, we'll be able to sell it no problems, and they don't do any preparation. Because, like you're saying, if we start preparing 3, 4, 5, even 10 years before we plan to exit, we make sure we get to know the right attorney, the right lawyer to work with. We know when to upgrade our tax person. We know which M&A consultant, broker, investment banker we're going to be working with, to that we get on well, is an expert in our industry, and over the years we'll build a relationship with them, and when we're ready, we can just pull the trigger and we can have 100% confidence. And it's not that we've done it before, but we've done all the preparation that puts us on the front foot, and we will definitely be one of the 20%.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Daryl, before I let you go, I got to know, how can we get in touch with you? How can folks listening or watching today reach out and connect with you, get Succession Plus?
Okay. The best way to get in touch with me is through LinkedIn. You can see my name on the screen. There's only one of me on the planet. It's good and bad sometimes, but LinkedIn is the fastest and easiest way to get in touch with me. And you'll get in touch from there. You'll get through to the website and everything from there.
Fantastic. We'll get that LinkedIn profile in the show notes as well, so you don't have to go searching for it. Although I wish I was able to say that. You'd think like a name like Scott Ritzheimer, there shouldn't be more than one of us, but I'm a junior. So I know the feeling there. But anyway, Daryl, fantastic. I love the simplicity of it and yet the power behind it. And I hope it sparked something for some folks listening today. Don't be one of the 4 in 5. Be one of the 1 in 5 and follow these steps. Maximize the value of your business and you will be so glad you did. Reach out to Daryl and the team. LinkedIn notes below. Daryl, thanks for being here. It was a privilege and honor having you on the show. I really appreciate it. And for those of you watching and listening today, you know that your time and attention mean the world to us. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I know I did. I cannot wait to see you next time. Take care. Scott Ritzheimer here. Thank you so much for listening to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast. I hope this episode gave you exactly what you need for your stage right now. If you want to discover what stage you're in, take our 10-question Founders Evolution quiz for free at founderskiz.com. That's founderskiz.com. It'll pinpoint exactly where you are and give you tailored tips to move forward and reach that next level in your journey as a founder. If you got something out of today's episode, would you do us a favor and share it on social media? Just grab a quick screenshot on your phone, text it to a friend, or post it on your favorite platform. Tag us and use hashtag StartScaleSucceed. I'd love to see your posts. You can also head over to scalearchitects.com/podcast to check out more episodes tagged by your stage so you can focus on what matters most right now. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review. It helps us to reach more founders like you, and it means a ton to me and my team. So let's keep starting, scaling, and succeeding together. I'll see you in the next episode.